Emily, I'm an alcoholic. It's good to be here tonight. Thank you. Thank you, Billy, for asking me to share my story. It's been a while, and it's been a long time since I've been to this meeting, so thanks for having me tonight. I haven't prepared, which I think is a good thing, but I'm like, yeah, there's a speaker. My sobriety date is March 29th, 2009. My home group is the Early Bird Group. We meet at 7 a.m. 7 days a week in Belmont and Charlottesville. And yeah, I guess that's, I feel like I'm leaving something out, but yeah, I'm grateful to be here tonight. I'll just start at the beginning. Yeah, I was just sort of reflecting today a little bit on, you know, how things got started for me, and you know, the way I grew up, there were some good things about it, and there were some not good things about it. And I could remember being, I don't know, there was aspects of my personality as a kid. Like, I really believe I was an alcoholic before I ever took a drink. I can look back in time and see that I had a lot of those characteristics, like restless, irritable, and discontent. You know, really being, like, extremely self-conscious of what other people thought of me. Kind of trying to mold myself to what I thought other people wanted me to be. And I really had this belief that, like, I had to make it happen. If I didn't make it happen, it wasn't going to happen, you know, whatever that might be, just self-sufficiency. You know, and some of that I think was a product of the way I grew up, and some of that just came from inside, and it was kind of like there was something missing or, yeah, and I can just, I can remember being, like, I can remember good parts. Like, my whole, it feels like my whole kind of theme of this year that's kind of emerging, you know, it's like towards the end of the year, and I'm kind of looking back on the year, is just kind of this realization that, like when I'm in a moment, it feels like that moment is so intense, like, what I'm feeling in that moment, and I feel like AA teaches me, you know, it's really through really trying to work the 11th step more rigorously, you know, at the end of the day, to zoom out and look at the full picture, you know, and it's never all bad and it's never all good. And so I just feel like, you know, if I can look at the full picture in my whole life, you know, it's never all bad and it's never all good. I don't, as I say that out loud and it sounds dumb, like, who doesn't know that? But I don't know, it's been kind of like big for me this year. Because I tend to be a pretty negative person and I have a hard time seeing the positive in things, which is an aspect of my character I don't love. But I can get kind of stuck in a negative place. Anyways, so, yeah, and I can remember good parts about being young and, like, good parts of my personality, and then these parts that were just kind of broken, and it was that internal unmanageability. You know, I couldn't control my emotional nature. I really liked being by myself. I felt like people were untrustworthy. And, I just have some kind of strange memories of being a kid. But the first time I remember getting drunk was at 13. And I had a friend over, and I just felt really uncomfortable. Like, it didn't feel comfortable for me to be with other people. It always felt like a lot of work. I've come to learn that I'm, like, an introvert as well, which is, like, a big part of that. But, you know, it didn't come easy. I was really worried about what other people thought of me. And so, like, I just remember my dad had a liquor cabinet, and I poured myself a big rum and coke. I don't know where that idea came from. It just kind of, like, happened. So I poured myself this big rum and coke, and then I didn't offer any to anybody else. And, you know, I proceeded to have, like, I want to say 3 or 4. And I just look back on that. It was like alcoholic drinking from the start, you know. Like, that was, I got drunk. I thought it was cool because I felt like I was getting away with it. One of my friends said, "Are you drunk right now?" And I said, "What's wrong with you? No, I'm not drunk." Like, you know, and so I lied about it, you know. I stole, you know. And, you know, it really didn't ever get better from that point, for sure. You know, that's how it started, and that's basically how it ended, too, kind of like drinking alone. And it was, you know, I drank a lot of my dad's liquor cabinet, and did that stuff where you fill it up with water. Like, that didn't go well. So it was hard to get alcohol where I lived, where I grew up. And so, like, I smoked a lot of pot in high school, and I hated it. I really hate drugs. Like, I don't have a lot of experience with drugs because I'm kind of a wuss when it comes to that stuff. But I like drinking always was the thing for me. It's like I can remember the feeling of taking, like I'm kind of a shallow breather, you know, I get kind of anxious, and it was like drinking, I could take a deep breath, you know what I mean? I could take a drink and I could take a deep breath and my shoulders would drop, and like I just felt that ease and comfort. Like I really believe that alcohol is really powerful for an alcoholic, and I don't know what a normal drinker's experience is like. It looks weird. It sounds weird. It's not my experience. I don't really understand it at all. I'm definitely an alcoholic, and you know, just that sense of it's like when I would drink, I felt more in control, and I felt like I just felt more awesome, like a better version of myself when I was drinking. Like I could be, it's like what everybody says, you know, all of a sudden I understand what's going on around me. Like people make sense. I know how to fit in. Like I feel funny. I feel whatever. It just gave me so much power, you know, like really a lot of power to do the things I wanted to do. And then I went to college, and there, you know, getting a hold of alcohol was certainly a lot easier, and I couldn't wait to get out of my house. I mean, I got the car keys and they never saw me again, you know, really until I got sober for the most part. And, yeah, so in college, you know, it just seemed like everybody, like the thing to do was to get drunk. You know, it wasn't really about learning or anything like that. You know, and looking back, like, I remember this one girl, she was really into hiking, and she wasn't a heavy drinker, and she was hiking. So I know there was people, like, doing stuff not that, aside from drinking, but you know, I was hanging out with the drinkers and I was drinking. And I had like so I was pretty isolated growing up. Like I had a sister and we had a troubled relationship. And I was just pretty isolated. Really like, yeah. I had a best friend growing up and then she moved away when I was like, I don't know, 10 or something. And that was devastating. So going to college, it was like you're confronted with all these people, but I couldn't wait to get there. And so I made friends with somebody, and like I made a best friend, and he ended up committing suicide like pretty soon after college started, and that was kind of a disaster for a lot of reasons, and it was really hard to understand what was going on. And I just remember my solution to that wasn't to talk to other people about it or, you know, seek help. But my solution was, there was this guy I knew, and he bought me, like, a bunch of cases of beer. And I sat in the basement. I was cat-sitting for this lady. And I sat in the basement. And I just remember having this really clear thought of, like, I'm going to get over this, you know. And, like, my solution was to sit there in the dark and drink. And, like, that was, I can look back, and that was kind of, like, a clear, like, progression of my drinking. Like, it turned into something else, like, more medicinal in a way. And it didn't work. Like, it definitely didn't work. I just got drunk. And was stuck with a cat. I felt, like, even more out of place after that, because, like, nobody knows how to talk about that kind of thing. Like, it's, like, a very isolating experience. And I just felt like I stuck out, like, a sore thumb. You know, everybody's trying to, like, be in college and do that kind of thing. But I stuck with it, with college, that is. And then after college, I worked on boats. I'm from Baltimore City, and so I fell into this whole, like, waterfront culture, which was more about the culture than the boats, you know, and it was, like, that's when, like, morning drinking became a thing, and really, like, work in itself wasn't the goal. Like, work was a means to an end, you know, to, like, get enough money to drink, and that felt like the full-time job, really, drinking, and then I was, you know, it was, like, the people in college, I just remember this feeling so well. Like, it's like everybody from college was moving on with their lives, and they were doing really adult things, like getting jobs and getting into relationships and buying houses and things, and I was, like, totally mystified by that and pretty disgusted. And but I think more I was more mystified. Like, I didn't know how they were doing that. Like, I didn't know how to do that. And so I kind of, you know, if, like, I felt like I didn't fit in with some people, I would just drop them. It, like, 100% and move on to, like, new people. And so that's what I did. And so when I lived in Baltimore, I was drinking with people that, you know, they were, like, 40, 50 years older than me. And I remember this one guy, like, we drank together every single night for a long time. And he was, like, quite a bit older than me. And, you know, we'd joke around at the bar and stuff. And then one day, like, I tried to control my drinking by taking up running, which, like, running on a, you know, drinking to get drunk the night before and then running early the next morning was not a good recipe. And I would always just end up, like, getting sick in the Inner Harbor, you know, and just, like, dragging myself back home and, like, smoking cigarettes. But anyway, so I remember running into this guy, like, in the daylight. I don't know why I'm telling this story, but seeing this guy in the daylight, and I said, I forget what his name was, let's say it's Chuck, and I was like, hey, Chuck, and he didn't have a clue who I was, like, and I just realized, like, whoa, like, I don't know, like, the drinking seemed different again, like, it progressed more, like, the people I was drinking with seemed a lot more serious about drinking, and, like, that kind of scared me a little bit, but I definitely had some shady behavior there, and, like, we worked on boats that were, like, tourist boats, and, like, I drank with this guy, and he asked me to, like, bring him, like, some airplane bottles in the morning, and I remember thinking, like, this is where that pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization, like, you don't understand what's happening to your morals, like, that's what was happening to me, and, like, I knew it wasn't the right thing to do, you know, like, we took little kids out on boats, you know what I mean, and, but I did it anyways, and I brought him all this, like, liquor, and he put it in his coffee. And, you know, so that kind of stuff started happening. You know, I would show up hungover or still drunk from the night before, like, all that kind of stuff. And I was kind of a bar fighter, and so, like, that was happening a lot, and I just ended up getting in a lot of trouble. And so just kind of, like, I, like, my story is kind of cyclical, and so I just ended up, like, it's like I could swap lives, you know, I just, like, left everything behind and just started a whole new life. New people, new job, moved, you know, like, I did that a number of times, and, yeah, so I guess I'll just say I did that, like, two or three times and would just try to, and in between I would stop drinking, and it wasn't, like, a conscious thought of, like, I'm not a normal drinker, I've got to stop drinking, it was, like, something bad would happen, you know, some kind of jackpot, and so I would stop drinking, and I have to say, you know, I really believe it's all, like, about that inside stuff, and that inside stuff was so crazy when I would stop drinking, like, even though the stuff on the outside looked more chaotic when I was drinking, like, the times that I was sober were so much worse, like, on the inside. I would cry myself to sleep, like, I had these friends, and they would say, like, come out with us, what's wrong with you, come out with us, and I just couldn't, you know, I just couldn't do anything sober, it seemed like, it was horrible, I mean, that was really a horrible time, so, you know, my experience, I always went back to drinking, and again, like, at the time, it didn't seem like a conscious thing, but my experience shows me I always went back to drinking, and when I would, and I remember when I would, like, start drinking, and I'd be like, why did I ever stop drinking, you know, it was like a confusion, like a, you know, it says in, I forget the name of the guy, but the story in the Big Book where it's like, insanity was sudden and sanity came slowly. Is that what it says? I don't know. Maybe it says something like that. But, you know, it's like that, the clarity around alcohol was so, it was like fuzzy. It was like a big cloud, you know? Anyhow, so, yeah, I just kind of changed lives a bunch of times. And by this time, you know, I went to art school and I had a bunch of friends in New York and they were, like, doing the thing in New York. And by that time, I had gone through a couple lives and, like, burned them to the ground each time and ended up moving down here. I didn't know a soul down here. I had this terrible job where I would just feed, like, paper into this scanner for 8 hours. You know, it was like, and I couldn't even handle it. Like, I'd have to take a smoke break, like, every 5 or 10 minutes. You know, I was, like, the worst employee they had. And it was the worst job. And I, you know, in my head, I'm like, they don't deserve me. Don't they know, you know, like, who I am? And, you know, just that kind of thinking. I think that some of us have. And so coming down here, yeah, my friends were doing stuff in New York. And they'd be like, come to New York, come to New York. And I had this one friend, Adrienne, and she drank just like me. She taught me how to like, be cool and, like, order a drink in a cool way from a bar, you know? Like, she was really charming, and I always wanted to be kind of like her. And she had gotten sober, and her life changed, like, a lot. And I remember thinking, why would she do that? And being like, how did she do that? And then being like, you know, what a so-and-so. She's trying to, like, get me to do what she's doing. And anyways, but she would say, you're getting really weird. Like, I was really isolated. I lived in this farmhouse, and I lived in the basement under the stairs. And this house didn't really have any furniture. But I would go, like, under the stairs, and I had a Rottweiler, and I had a chainsaw, and I had a shotgun, and, like, a coffee maker. And when the neighbors would knock on the door, I would hide behind, you know, like, a wall. I would always, like, try to pretend I wasn't there. But I didn't even know why. You know, I think I had so much, like, shame and guilt and fear. It was just, like, all kind of had piled on after these, like, just these lives I'd blown through, just kind of, like, all that stuff was adding up. I think I thought I could, like, walk away from my own life and really start anew, like, and just leave all that stuff behind. And I feel like I had a version of that in sobriety, too. Like, well, if I just take inventory about it, it's done. That door is closed, you know? And it was, like, kind of an awakening, like, that doesn't work like that. It hasn't for me in some cases. You know, like, I have this desire to really, like, shut the door on the past in a lot of ways. And anyway, so moving down here, I'm living in this farmhouse, and it's, you know, my friend's like, you are getting so weird. Like, you know, I was just, like, I spent a year cutting trees down, totally isolated, and a lot of that was sober. You know, a lot of that was sober. I mean, I remember just sitting there and staring at the wall. Like, I don't know, my life sober is, like, the worst thing. I wouldn't, you know, like, wish that on anybody. So, of course, I returned to drinking again down here. I got in a lot of trouble. And I never went to jail, but I was, there was a pretty big hint that I was about to lose my job. And at this point, I had this job where my job was kind of to pick up the phone and answer it. And I would pick up the phone and hang it back up again. I just couldn't do anything. I couldn't face anybody. I think back, and I'm, like, so grateful I had these little jobs just to, like, kind of get through, because I didn't deserve any of them. And, yeah, and so I went back to drinking, and it was, you know, it was just the amount that I was drinking, it, like, would pick up so fast. Like, I would start drinking, and I would start drinking so much so fast. It's like each time I can look back and see how it progressed. Kind of every time I would stop drinking and then go back to it. Like, it's really clear for me. I mean, I would drink a lot more, and unfortunately, it would work less, you know? And by the end of my drinking, like, I had this lump in my throat, and I was convinced I had, like, throat cancer because I smoked a lot of cigarettes. And I had no indication that this was the case, but, man, it gave me a good excuse to drink, you know? I remember just making a decision to give up entire paychecks for alcohol. And, you know, at this time, like, I was really anemic from drinking. My idea of a meal was, like, two slices of white bread and some mayonnaise. That's pretty much all I had going on. I thought cigarettes counted as food. I thought beer counted as food. And, you know, my friend Adrian, who had gotten sober, she's, like, talking to me this whole time, and she's like, I am grossed out by your life. You are living a gross life. And I just thought she was, like, being judgmental and trying to push her things on me. And, but I, you know, this is when I was drinking whiskey in the morning. I would, the alcohol would, like, wake me up at, like, 2 or 3 in the morning, and I would be, like, wide awake, like, racing brain, like, sweating. And I would have to drink to go back to sleep for a couple hours and then do it all over again. And I started to, it's like she planted a seed, I think, and I started to think, like, maybe this isn't normal. You know, she would call me and she'd say, are you drinking right now? And I would put the beer down and I would say, no. And, you know, that's like the only kind of honesty I could muster at the time. And I don't know, it just, things spun out of control on the outside, but definitely on the inside, too. You know, it's like I don't know, it's like I couldn't get drunk anymore, you know, like, the power that it once held, like, it was not, I mean, I was getting drunk and, like, stuff was happening, and if anybody drank that much, stuff would happen to them, too, but it's like the power that it used to have to, I don't know, take care of me and make me powerful, like, it wasn't doing that anymore. Like, I could get really drunk, but still, like, just be full of, like, crazy fear. I mean, like, paralyzing fear. And, you know, it wasn't, like, enabling me to do the things that it used to enable me to do, like, be in relationships or do things. And that was really scary, I think, for me. And so my friend Adrian said, like, do you think you could even stop drinking? And I was like, well, of course I can. Like, I've done that a million times. And so I set myself this challenge to stop drinking for a day. And I had, like, this fridge full of beer and, like, a couple bottles of whiskey, which was my favorite thing to drink. And I remember just laying in bed, like, sweating, you know, just, like, alcohol coming out of my pores. And I was like, I'm doing it, you know, and just feeling, like, crazy and just knowing that there's all this alcohol that I can drink tomorrow. And I think that was kind of like the beginning of the end. And so, you know, and then I, you know, it's like I would try to hide that stuff by going out and trying to, like, look social. But, you know, I was the kind of friend that I'd go out with some girlfriends and, like, I wouldn't go home with them. You know, I don't know how they got home. Like, and I would be the driver, you know, like, like, you had to kind of find out your own thing if you went out with me. I'd probably end up in a different place than we started in. And I'd usually pick up some friends along the way, pick up a few bruises. Like, you know, it's just, it would be a total, like, downward spiral every time I would go out. And so the last night of my drinking, I remember, like, having this plan in mind. The plan did not go as I intended. I got really drunk before I even went to the bar. You know, so I was drunk when I showed up. The line to the bar was really long, which really made me mad, you know. And just, like, so, you know, kind of got into some fights here and there. And then, and I just had somebody else in my car. And I just remember being so angry, like an uncontrollable rage came over me. And I did a lot of drunk driving for sure. And so I'm with this person in my car and we're just like driving, like doing donuts in the middle of the road. And I am wasted. And, somehow I ended up getting home that night. I don't remember how I got home, but I woke up the next morning on the bathroom floor, you know, like, and it was like this nice concrete. It was nice and cool, which was awesome. You know, just like, I was like, I need a cigarette. I, like, pulled myself off the bathroom floor and went outside. And one of my neighbors was, like, jogging by, and I used to, like, flick my cigarettes at runners. And I was, like, you know, so mad because they could, like, do stuff and be in the sunshine and, like, I wasn't doing anything in the daylight at that point at all. And I felt so gross. I just felt completely gross. And I, like, you know, it was like noon or whatever. And I just was like, I hadn't felt that bad. And the night before that I had drank so much, I was like paralyzed for 12 hours. And somehow I ended up at the bar that night. And I can look back now on that night, like, I don't think I ever said I'm not going to drink. I don't have a lot of experience saying I'm not going to drink and then ending up drinking. Like, I intended to drink most of the time I drank. But the last night I drank, I was like, I'm not going to drink tonight. I was terrified. I had just had, like, alcohol poisoning, yet I was at the bar. And this girl handed me Jägermeister, which I hated. And I remember thinking, like, I don't want that, but my arm reached out and it just, like, happened. And then I got, you know, proceeded to get drunk. And that's a really important memory for me, because for me that's it happening without me having a choice. Like, that's a really clear picture in my mind of me not having a choice whether to drink or not. Anyway, so the next morning, and my first instinct was to call my friend Adrian, and she said, are you ready to go to a meeting yet? And I was like, well, I don't know about that, you know, and, you know, just trying to reel it back in. I don't know. For me, I was just done. I was scared. Like, it wasn't working. My life was, like, this big. You know, I was 28 when I got sober. I didn't have anything to show in my life. But the worst part was alcohol didn't seem to be, it wasn't, like, doing anything for me. It was just making things worse. And I think, like, I like this definition of a bottom, which is, like, you really want to do something with your life, but you realize you can't. Like, you don't have the power. Like, you want to change something, and you just don't have the power. I'm not saying that very well. There's a better way to say it, but that's the idea. And, you know, I could just see people around me having lives. Like, my friend Adrian, she drank just like me. How come her life looks like that, and mine looks like this? And so, and she hadn't been taking my calls for a while, so for me it was like, I can totally see God in that moment. Like, she picked up the phone that morning. And so she went on, she lived in Louisville, and so she went online and, like, found a meeting. I don't know, that's how I got to AA. That's what my drinking looked like. Hopefully not in too much detail. And so then I got to AA, and I didn't really have any ideas about AA. I never knew anybody that was in it except for my friend. You know, I think I might have thought what was in the movies of, like, a bunch of coal miners in a basement. Like, I didn't know it had anything to do with God. I didn't know anything about it. And so the very first meeting I went to, there's only one person there. And he spent 45 minutes with me, like, I don't know, it was, like, so special looking back. Like, if I think maybe if I had walked into a big room of people, I don't know. I just, like, this is my story, you know what I mean? It's, like, just the way it worked. The way that it happened for me. And so he spent like 45 minutes with me explaining to me what AA was, that there's like this book, that there's 12 steps, that, you know, in the beginning it's good to stick with the women. And it was kind of a magical experience because he said, like, you know, if like what AA can like restore us to what we wanted to do in life anyway. So like if you want to be an artist, you could just be an artist. And I was like, man, that's what I've always wanted to be. How did he know that? And, you know, and he'd say, sometimes you'll hear crazy stories, like, you know, sometimes people get into bar fights, and I was like, you know, totally the perp, and I didn't want him to know that about me, but I'm pretty sure I had a black eye. And, you know, so just, like, all these connections, I don't know, I can just, like, see God's, like, God all in that, you know, just, like, I don't know, like, nudging me along or something. And, yeah, and so I grew up totally with no concept of God. Like, it's an intellectual family. You're going to, you know, your destiny is in your hands. And some of those aspects are good. Sometimes I'm jealous of people that were raised, like, in a, that had exposure to, you know, some concept of God, whatever that looked like. And I just didn't have any concept at all. And, so it didn't freak me out when I was hearing about that. I just, like, didn't really have an opinion one way or the other. And anyway, so he guided me to a meeting later that night and introduced me to some women. And I don't know, like, my sponsor was there. I can think back then. And people were, like, really nice to me. I don't know. This one lady said, what are you doing tomorrow morning? I'm going to the early bird meeting. It's at 7 a.m. I'll see you there. And I was like, am I supposed to go to that? You know, and I didn't know what to do, so I went. And it just seemed like people were nice like that, like kind of, I don't know, like dropped little breadcrumbs or something. And I don't know why I did any of that stuff. I don't know. But I'm really glad that I did. I think I could see, like, I remember being shocked in my first meeting about people, like, telling on themselves, and I was like, ooh, why would you tell people that's about yourself? You know, don't show your weakness, you know? You know, I was all about being, like, a tough girl and, you know, don't come near me kind of thing. And so when people, like, expose themselves with the language of the heart, I was like, it was intense. I remember that being really intense. And I really admire that about people when they can really, like, I don't know, just talk from the heart. Like, my least favorite thing is when you know somebody's life is a disaster, but they're at the podium talking like they know it all. It's like, I can't stand that. I don't know why you're laughing. And are you trying to tell me something? Anyway, so I remember that was really attractive to me. Like, I don't know why, but it was. And so I kept coming, and they would talk about drinking, and I could totally identify with that. And I remember in an early meeting, somebody was like, yeah, I really isolate a lot. And I was like, what? Like, that's what I do, but what does that have to do with drinking? Like, none of it made sense, but it was like, I don't know, just, like, I was telling somebody the other day, like, I picture my innermost self place. It's like, I don't know, I don't need to go into the detail, but there's like a gong there, you know what I mean? And like, I would come into, it's like somebody was like hitting this gong for me in AA meetings. Like something was just true and right, and I just like knew that. And so I kept coming back. And then in the beginning, I went to a lot of AA meetings. I just went to like a lot of AA meetings. And I immediately became friends with a few women my age, and we did everything together. I mean, we did everything together. And my little friend and me, she'd say, "You go, I don't know what to do. You go ask your sponsor, and I'll go ask my sponsor." And they would, like, report back to each other. I don't know. Yeah, it seems like a while ago. I don't know. I feel like lately I've been thinking about, like, it felt really comfortable for me to, like, latch on to other people's ideas. Like, people that seemed strong in sobriety, I was like, I don't know what they have, so I'm going to believe what they believe. And, like, I don't know, like, taking on those ideas. And I think what's been really painful, but what's been true for me is, like, I don't know, lately just, like, looking at some of those, you know, it usually comes up in inventory, but, like, looking at some of those things that I thought were really true about AA and that, I don't know, and, like, seeing, like, wait, I don't believe that. That was somebody else's idea. And, like, today I have the freedom to, like, throw it out. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, I don't know. And some of that stuff is just, like, outside stuff. Like, which is all it's a long-winded way of saying, like, for me it's an inside job, and that's been the real miracle here is, like, I don't really care what people think about me today, for better or worse. I have a developing sense of self. Like, I used to just feel like such a fraud everywhere I went, and like, I don't feel like that today. Like, I know what my strengths are. I'm pretty sure what some of my character defects are. I feel like I'm scratching away at getting more authentic. And what's hard about that is, like, it is not a pretty picture a lot of the time, you know? It's just, there's a lot of parts about myself that I really don't like. But the bigger picture is, like, I have hope that, like, God will change some of those things. And that's been my experience, you know? Like, I'm not drinking today, and I know that that's a miracle. I try not to underestimate the power of God in this program, you know? So at the very beginning for me, like, I thought that, you know, it was like this very, like, ritualized way that I thought that you had to communicate with a higher power. And, like, I didn't have the steps in my life in the beginning, you know what I mean? So it was like, get on your knees and pray in the morning, and get on your knees and pray at the end of the day. And, like, I remember one day, like, forgetting to do that when I woke up, and, like, being in the hallway with walking my dog and, like, just, like, panicking and dropping to my knees and being like, oh, my God, I didn't pray. Does that mean I'm going to drink, you know? And that's really changed for me. But that's what it was like in the beginning. I would try anything, and I think that was a good thing. I would try anything people told me to do. And then I got, you know, after a while I got a sponsor, and at that time she would just read to me out of the big book, and it was like, you know, I mean, none of that stuff landed. I couldn't understand it. I would just get caught up in the, like, the language. And actually, the truth be told, like, I would get annoyed that she was reading at me. You know, I was like, just thought that was rude. But I went to a lot of AA meetings. I don't know, like, I feel like I would never tell somebody to do what I did, because it just seems weird looking back, but it's like, it's just my story, you know, it's just like what led me here today. Yeah, then I got a resentment, so I got a new sponsor. This person was more about spending time with me talking about the way that I felt, and that made me really sick. Like, I just remember that made me really sick. I got really sick doing that. I think that's not, it just wasn't, whatever. You know, I think I really just needed some actions to take that were not just about going to meetings, but, like, I needed the steps in a big way. And then I just, like, went through a whole bunch of people, like, and I remember just being like, nobody's got the answer for me. And the one thing I never gave up was going to meetings. So I just remember being 2.5 years sober and feeling so crazy, like crazier than the day I came into AA, and being really confused about why that was. Because, like, you know, I could say I've done everything everybody's told me to do. Why do I feel this way? You know, it's like back at that first step, like, am I really an alcoholic? Do I really belong here? And, my emotions had, like, kind of taken over. Like, I would just burst into tears at very random moments. It was like the bedevilments, and I love the bedevilments, especially the part where, like, it says we're a prey to misery and depression. We can't control our emotional natures. We felt useless. I always picture myself as, like, yeah, I don't know, this is just what works for me, like this little bunny rabbit running around in a field, like a nature documentary or something, and, like, my emotions are like these eagles that are, like, just dive-bombing me. They just come out of nowhere, and I can't control it, and it just takes over. That's a very uncomfortable feeling, you know? I don't like that feeling, so I just remember thinking, like, this sucks, and being in meetings, and I couldn't hear anybody. It was like there was water in my ears, you know? I just was, like, so loud in my head, and I just heard this woman kind of share similar experience, you know, being 8 or 9 years sober and feeling like back at the beginning, like, why? I feel crazy. That's what I heard. And so I was really scared, but, you know, asked this person for help and just went through the steps out of the big book in a way that made sense to me. And it's like this very slow, I picture it like, it's not a good analogy to share anyways, but it's like this kind of like, I don't know, really digging deep to find the truth. And I really needed help to see, I get the part where I was powerless over alcohol, but for me, that unmanageability, like, here I am 2.5 years sober, and I can't manage my life. And that was, like, made really clear at that point. And I also needed help going back and understand. It's like, for 2.5 years, I would say I'm an alcoholic, my life is unmanageable, but in my head, I was like, I don't know what that means. You know, like, people would say, yeah, it's an allergy, it's an obsession. I was like, that doesn't really help, you know? Like, that doesn't make any sense. And I needed it, like the big book to be used as a tool to look at my life, you know what I mean? To, like, help me have a lens, an alcoholic lens to see my life, and now I can look back and see it more clearly for what it was. I don't know if that makes sense, but I just really needed help with that, especially the obsession part, too, to know that the allergy is when there's alcohol in my body and the obsession is when I'm away from alcohol. How come every time I went back to it? You know, and to really admit that I didn't have a choice in that sounds crazy, you know. Like, it's a hard thing to admit because I think it sounds kind of crazy. And that's what the big book says. It's a strange insanity, you know, when it comes to alcohol. I'm also really afraid of mental illness. That's, like, from my family. And so when I would hear the word insanity, I'd be, like, just, you know, shut down my ears. So I needed a lot of help, and I'm glad that the help was there. And I feel like since that, I can remember sitting on my sponsor's couch and, like, really feeling that in my innermost self, like, and it was, like, this really scary moment. I felt, like, full of panic, like, the real hopelessness of the first step, you know, really getting that, like, at a cellular level. She was like, all right, see you next week. And I was like, you gotta help me, like, you know, I just couldn't stay there, and it's like the steps almost happen before you're there. That's what it seems like sometimes. It's like the step, like, it happens on its own, and like then I'm at that step. I don't know if that makes sense, but anyhow, so that was kind of the foundation, that was the starting point, and I could see, like, wow, this unmanageability thing, that's what was there from the beginning. That's that sense of restless, irritable, and discontent. That's what I have today. You know, if I don't work the steps today, that's where I'm at. It gets better, but, like, I don't know, kind of doesn't too, you know? Like, I can wake up, and sometimes it's really disappointing. It's like, oh my gosh, I'm almost 8 years sober. Like, how come I still have some of this, like, ick, you know? It's because I'm an alcoholic. I didn't mean to make that connection, but, when I wake up, I'm an alcoholic, and again, it's a mistake for me to underestimate, like, what God's done in my life, but for me, it's, like, this big paradox of, like, it's, like, yeah, God shows up and has mercy and grace and stuff, but, like, I have to take action, you know, and I just remember always looking at the big book for that part that said, good job, Emily, you know, go find your hammock and lay down and take a nap, and, you know, every single chapter begins and ends with more action, you know, it's, like, more action. Come on. You know, kind of a drag, but I don't know. I think another kind of miracle that takes place over time is, like, it doesn't feel like homework today. It doesn't feel like a job. I don't know. I feel like today I know the consequences of not working the steps and what that feels like sober, and it feels really bad. And I don't want to say it's, like, fear-driven that I go into the steps, but it's, like, hopeful. It's more hopeful. It's, like, I know that that's where the way out is, and I like how they, I think they almost called the big book The Way Out. I'm not really a historian, but I think that would be a great name for the big book. So then I went through the steps that way, and it was really long, and I have some kind of cool stories about things that happened. We're just reminiscing about, I remember the first third step I took, I remember where it was, and because it really was a decision I don't think I've ever taken back. And there's a speaker that we really like, and he says, you know, it doesn't mean I don't try to run the show, but I've never taken that back. I know the steps are pretty amazing. Like, I feel like it's up to us individually to either believe in them, the power that they hold and the process, or to not, you know what I mean? Or just kind of think it's about drinking. I don't know. I feel like it can be as powerful as we want it to be. I don't know if that makes sense either. But, so I love that I can keep coming back to AA and having just these new experiences, and that it evolves. I mean, it never stays still. It never stays boring. Sometimes I get really annoyed at people in AA, you know, and I guess it's weird that it takes me a long time to always come back to the realization that it's me, you know. My first instinct is always to blame others for the way that I feel. I don't know. And so I did my fourth step. I don't know why I want to share this story, but I had, like, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of resentments. And I was like, I am never going to get through this fourth step. And I ended up going to New Orleans. Somebody had given me a free vacation to New Orleans. Not a great place to take inventory, but that's how it worked. And so I'm, like, there in the French Quarter. And I went to AA meetings kind of in this beautiful church. And down there they give you this little, like, pink coin that has a pink cloud on it if you're a visitor. That was kind of cool. But so I was just trying to write this inventory. And it really, I mean, I don't know, at that point it felt, I can remember what it felt like. It felt like, I don't know, like ripping my shadow away from my body. Like, it just felt, my ego was just being, like, crushed. It felt horrible. And I didn't think I was going to make it through it. And I think I almost didn't. I think I almost drank. And I remember being in the French Quarter, and I had a friend down there. And they drank a lot, and I had, like, forgotten that. And so I got down there, and I'm a sober person, and what a drag. You know what I mean? If you're a person that drinks, then here comes a sober person. But so I would, like, go to the bars with them. Like, I can't believe I would gamble with my sobriety like that. But, I mean, at the time, I think I was crazy. I think I was crazy at that time. And so I remember being outside of this bar and in broad daylight, like 10 in the morning or something, and they pull this guy out of the bar, out of this Irish bar, and he's laying, like, in this green slime in the gutter, and totally, he looks like he was passed out, and there's, like, this girl there, she's all done up, and she's, like, giggling, and they called the ambulance, and, you know, at first I'm like, yeah, it's just New Orleans, and then, but the ambulance comes, they, like, stuck all these, like, needles in him, and, like, used the, like, heart pump things, and they couldn't resuscitate him, and, yeah, I was watching it. I was, like, glued to the scene, just watching it unfold for, like, an hour. It was probably, like, 3 minutes. But it felt like a long time. And I didn't have the courage to tell my friend I was sober either. You know, like, it was like I was dipping my toes in or something. I wasn't, like, today I would not put anything between me and my sobriety, I hope. You know what I mean? Like, I don't eat food with alcohol in it. I don't drink stuff that even has, like, anything that sounds like alcohol in it. If it tastes weird and I don't know what it is, I'm not going to eat it. It's a struggle for me to even take, like, Tylenol, you know? I'm just, like, I am not gambling today. But so it's frightening to think back. Like, it's, like, a cartoon. It's like all these anvils just like falling behind me. You know, it's like God really, I feel like, protected me through a lot of dumb things I did in sobriety. Anyways, and I remember looking at this guy and thinking, man, if I don't finish this inventory, that could be me, you know? And so I went back and locked myself in this like really gross hotel room and just finished my inventory and went home. But I don't know, that felt like a do or die kind of moment for me. So it did as well in amends, in making amends. Like back then, the 6 and 7 step were just filler. I didn't know what they were, so I did them, but like nothing, I don't have any memories of that. But in amends, I made some amends. I feel like I'm still making amends to my family and like a lot of people just in the world, just trying to be better. I was really a hostile, violent person for a lot of my life. Just a mean person. And I'm so glad, I don't think that's who I am today. That comes out, you know what I mean? My poor husband, you know, I married a very wonderful man, very gentle, very like good man. I definitely don't deserve that kind of love, you know what I mean? But, you know, unfortunately, he gets the worst, you know what I mean? He tends to get the worst. He gets the worst, work gets the worst, you know, but that kind of shows me, too, like, I learn a lot about my higher power through other people, and just that, you know, people generally don't give up on you if you make a mistake or do something bad. You know, there's like forgiveness there and love, and I think that that's how my higher power is too. Anyways, so yeah, so I got married in sobriety. It's kind of amazing. And I'm so lucky for that. I have 2 stepkids today. That's kind of special. I have a career today that I've been able to build, which is like so hard. My pride just, I have no reason to have this pride, but it gets all puffed up, and then I'm like just a total, it's good in some cases, but it's really not good in some cases, and I felt the pain of that this last week. So all to say, like, my life today, it's not perfect. There's so much that I want to change. My prayer the last sleepless nights have been like, God, change me. God, change me. I heard this guy share in a meeting recently, like, you know, it's like I can take that daily inventory and at the end be like, the prayer can be like, this is me, change me. You know, I feel like that's my prayer a lot. So like, feels like for a lot of years I would not do the 10th and 11th step and like all that stuff would build up. And I'm an artist. I even made this like sculpture of like this like oriental rug that's just like got all this like stuff under it. You know, it's like sweeping under the rug. And I keep it around. And it's like, and then I would, I don't know, I feel like I was, I don't know why it took me so long to get into doing those steps. I don't know why, but it's like one day a switch came on and I was just like willing to do those steps of looking at myself each day. And that has been a game changer. I mean, I don't know, to really like do like a written thing at the end of the day. And like I said, it's the inventory, you know, and there's not a day that goes by that I do not have fear and resentment. That's just the truth. But also the truth is I can actually, like, I can also look at the positive things. Who did I help today? You know, what did I accomplish today? What am I grateful for today? What I'm finding is sometimes I'll be so kind of jammed up about a resentment, I won't even go near the 11th step. I'll be like, I just can't, you know? I can't sit still. I can't listen. It's like loud in my head. So I'm still feel like kind of a baby in those steps, just learning that stuff. But I feel like what's amazing about that is like I'm not afraid to look at myself today. I really hate what I see a lot of the time, you know what I mean? Like the resentment part and the fear part. It's like I want to be better than that. But at least I can look at it today. I can look at it and see it for what it is. And then, like, ask God for forgiveness and move on and shut the book on the end of the day and start a new day tomorrow. And that's, like, I mean, when I used to get a resentment, I remember saying I was, like, five years sober or something, and having this resentment, I look back, and it was so dumb. I mean, it was just this dumb moment, you know what I mean, of, like, this guy that just meant, I mean, I barely even knew him, but I mean, I was, like, so angry. And it says in the big book, we were sore, we were burned up. And I felt like that. Like, I mean, every time it would come to mind, I would, like, flush. You know what I mean? It's like my face would get hot. And I remember saying to my sponsor, like, I'm so angry, I would rather die than feel like this. And, like, for me, that's the power of resentments. So, yeah, and they would just get stuck to me, like, for months. I always picture it as, like a big piece of trash getting stuck to my face. And, like, I try to pretend it's not there, but it's like, look in the mirror, there it is. And so today, I don't know, it feels like maybe it's this journey of becoming more honest or something, self-honesty, and it doesn't really matter what other people think, and that I can take that stuff to a higher power, and that that's not the end of the story. My inventory's not the end, you know, like, then I ask God to change me, and I go out into the world and have a life and just practice this stuff. I don't know. So, yeah, this year has been, like, about throwing out a lot of old ideas, and a lot of those are AA ideas, you know, and finding the truth for me in the big book and in the steps, and just trying to be more authentic. You know, it says that in the big book, too. It says these words don't, I'm saying it wrong, but it says something like these words don't mean anything until they mean something to you. Like, we all have our own, as my friend says, we have the dignity of our own experience, you know. And, like, one of the last things I'll share is, I was in a meeting just, like, this past week, and it was a daily reflection that we read, and it said, trying to stop drinking is like trying to hold back the waves of the ocean. And that, it's just, I think it's a good illustration of powerlessness. But for me, that's also my life today. It feels like that, you know? Like, I'm not running the show, and I'm not in control. And when I, to think that I can control, I don't know, emotions or outcomes or situations feels, it's like, I don't know. It gets to that point where I realize that that's what I'm doing, trying to, like, hold back the waves of the ocean. So I think the greatest thing that AA has given me is I feel like today I have more integrity. You know, I'm more like the same person that walks into every situation. You know, I'm not like a fraud anymore. I'm pretty much tell the truth most of the time. But also this relationship with a higher power, I just can be a really negative person. I was thinking this week, like, everybody I've ever met is really disappointing. And I was like, that's a horrible thing to say out loud. I said it in a meeting. I just see these people's faces, like, melting off. And I was like, I should keep that thought to myself. But, you know, but it's true because, like, people are people. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. For me, there's hope in that statement. Like, people will fail you. You know what I mean? Because then I can see it for what it is. It's like a beautiful relationship. We're humans. And for me, that reliance has to be on a higher power, something that is beyond human, that is, you know, I have my own concept of what that is, and you all are welcome to your own concept as well. For me, something that has been kind of a struggle this year, too, is like, I feel like on the outside things, well, my ducks are all in a row, right? I've got the job, I've got the house, I've got the husband. Missing a couple things there, but and I remember just thinking, like, I feel really lonely. Why do I feel like this? You know, this is what it looks like on the outside. How come I feel like this? And just sort of realizing, like, it is an inside job. I think it's, but it's not, I don't know, this is, like, so cheesy, but it's an inside job, meaning sobriety for me is not about lining up all the stuff on the outside and not about looking good, but it's about having a relationship with a higher power and that kind of showing up on the outside. I don't know if I'm not saying that well, but it's an inside job. It is a lonely thing. It's like, it's me and God, you know, like that is an important part of my sobriety. And then there's also me and people, you know. Like one of the greatest, most awesome things is having a sponsor, having somebody that you can trust and talk to about anything. And I have a lot of embarrassing thoughts. there's a lot of embarrassing things I still do, you know, but just like be able to be, to have somebody to talk to about that stuff and get some direction. And then you know, working with other women. I kind of hate the word sponsor because it sounds like a hierarchy, and I don't like to see it that way. I like to see, like, we're all, like, shoulder to shoulder walking forward. It says that in the big book, right? It's like side by side, shoulder to shoulder, something like that. You know, we walk with a new man, you know, like, together. One of my least favorite things is, like, yeah, anyways, I don't need to talk about that, but, you know, that we're all, like, sisters and brothers, like, just moving forward. But to be able to pass on the steps to somebody else is, like, completely amazing. And it really made me kind of understand the steps better so that I wasn't, like, just, you know, saying something that I didn't believe or, like, I feel like I'm done being a fraud. Like, if I don't know it, I'll tell you I don't know it. I feel like for, anyways, so it gave me, like, this whole other exposure to the steps, you know, to really have to understand it in a different way in order to explain it to somebody else or, like, walk with them through that. So I'm pretty sure I'm not great at that type of thing, like being a sponsor, but it's really good for me. Like, I'm really grateful for anybody that chooses to spend time with me, to be honest about that, about their life, you know what I mean? Because, like, it's like I can see in that relationship how small I am, you know, how ineffective. Most people I've ever worked with have drank again, and I don't know, just like, man, I'm just, like, here, you know what I mean? Like, maybe planting a seed. Like, one time I had this sponsee, and she went out on Purell and pills, and I just remember I was so freaked out by that. I was like, what do I do in this situation? And just, like, taking that to in my morning meditation, and what came out of it was, like, you're just planting a seed. And I was like, I don't know, that's kind of the idea I've gone with ever since then. Anyways, I'm grateful to be sober. I'm grateful to be here. I think everything I said was the truth, and my life looks really different than when I got here, thank God. And I hope, you know, in another 7 years, I know it's just going to keep evolving. It's going to keep changing, and I love that about AA, and I love just that we get to be here. You know, like, it's the constant in my life. Like, I can always come to a meeting. I don't know. It's just kind of been a great journey for me, and I hope it keeps going. Thanks for letting me share tonight.